Donald Trump's former foes take the stage.
I'll start by making one thing perfectly clear. Donald Trump has my strong endorsement.
Plus, the American election season is big news in Israel.
As the United States is expected to play a major role in helping to achieve a ceasefire and hostage release and in helping to arrange a new government in Gaza.
And later, Hezbollah sends a warning to Israel as NATO opens an office in the Middle East. And we get an update from Kyiv, including results of a recent poll on peace talks. Today is Wednesday, July 17th. And this is VOA's Flashpoint, Global Crises. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. On Wednesday, Iran rejected what it called malicious accusations by U.S. media implicating it in a plot to kill former U.S. President Donald Trump. CNN reported Tuesday that U.S. authorities received intelligence from a human source weeks ago on an alleged Iranian plot against the former president, prompting his protection to be boosted. A National Security Council spokesperson tells VOA that she believes Iran seeks revenge for the 2020 killing of Iranian General Qasem Soleimani and that it's considered a national security threat of the highest priority. And the top political story today continues to be the Republican National Convention, where the U.S. Republican Party put some of Donald Trump's former foes back in the spotlight on the second night of its nominating convention. VOA's chief national correspondent Steve Herman was on the convention floor Tuesday and has details from Milwaukee.
The official theme of day two of the Republican National Convention, Make America Safe Again. It could have been Republicans all play nice again. Donald Trump's former foes in this year's party primary took turns issuing messages of unity.
If you want to seal the border, vote Trump. If you want to restore law and order in this country, vote Trump.
Besides entrepreneur Vivek Ramaswamy, former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley also put aside her previous policy differences with the former president.
I'll start by making one thing perfectly clear. Donald Trump has my strong endorsement.
During this year's primary battle, Haley was Trump's last challenger. The U.S. ambassador to the United Nations during Trump's administration had attacked her former boss as unfit and unelectable. Delegates from Haley's home state, such as Jerry McDaniel and Robin Hawley, prefer to look ahead, not back.
It doesn't matter who ran against him before. President Trump is bringing them all in together, and that's what we want to see.
Do you think Governor Haley has her heart totally into this Trump 2024 campaign now against President Biden?
I think if she is a person that I think that she might be, because I don't know her, I think that she's got some forgiveness and some motivation to move on and to keep us together and to help our country.
Other former Trump opponents from this year's primary and those from the past addressing the convention Tuesday included Senator Ted Cruz of Texas, Marco Rubio of Florida, former Housing Secretary Ben Carson, and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis.
My fellow Republicans, let's send Joe Biden back to his basement and let's send Donald Trump back to the White House.
Some of the former and future presidential hopefuls praising Trump here tonight might be seeking to court his favor and that of the delegates 4 years from now, as a Republican victory at the top of the ticket in November would give Trump his second and final term. Steve Herman, VOA News, at the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee.
Israelis are also closely watching the coming U.S. elections, seeing them as crucial in deciding the outcome of the war in Gaza and its aftermath. Linda Gradstein reports from Jerusalem.
Israelis are keeping a close eye on the upcoming U.S. elections as the United States is expected to play a major role in helping to achieve a ceasefire and hostage release and in helping to arrange a new government in Gaza. Several polls in Israel show Israeli public opinion has shifted, especially in the past year. Eli Cook is a professor of American history at the University of Haifa.
October 7th has mostly moved Israelis to the right. And so when they look at American politics or anywhere, they kind of see a left-right divide, and they're usually going to go to the side that they identify with more. And that side would, in this case, be Donald Trump.
More than 200,000 dual U.S.-Israeli citizens live in Israel, and many plan to vote in the U.S. election. The Jewish state has long enjoyed a special relationship with Washington, and since the start of the war against Hamas last October, the U.S. has passed legislation to send Israel $12.5 billion in military aid. Many Israelis remember former President Trump's bold actions in support of Israel during his first term in office. Amos Asael is a fellow at the Shalom Hartman Institute in Jerusalem and a columnist for the Jerusalem Post.
People say he moved the American embassy to Jerusalem. He recognized Israel's sovereignty over the Golan Heights. He supported Israel through thick and thin, especially in terms of its struggle with Iran. So there is an aspect of gratitude.
Analysts say many Israelis also appreciate the support shown by President Biden since the Hamas attack on Israel on October 7th, despite protests of some in his own party. Biden visited Israel just days after the Hamas attack on October 7th, passed a massive aid package, and played a key role in defending Israel against the hundreds of Iranian missiles fired at Israel in April, while making sure that the attack would not develop into a regional war. But the Biden administration's decision to withhold a portion of the U.S. arms shipments, fearing that their use in the crowded Gaza Strip would cause many civilian deaths in Gaza, caused tension with the Netanyahu government and influenced Israeli public opinion against him. Daniel Gordis is a fellow at the Shalem Institute in Jerusalem.
Joe Biden has given Israel a very long leash. We're more than 9 months into the war, and he has at no point said a ceasefire immediately now. He's held up some 2,000-pound bombs that were going to be used, he thought, in urban areas that he didn't want to happen, but he's otherwise kept the flow of arms fairly consistent.
While polls suggest Israelis want Trump to win the U.S. election, some Israeli analysts see a Trump victory as cause for concern. Again, Amos Asael.
I'm not at all convinced that Trump's overall pro-Israeli attitude and pronouncements say much about the future. He can turn on a dime.
Prime Minister Netanyahu visits Washington next week. He plans to address a joint session of Congress at the invitation of Republicans in what some see as a partisan move by Netanyahu, much like his addresses to Congress in 2011 and 2015 in the face of opposition by then-President Obama and then-Vice President Biden. Linda Gradstein, VOA News, Jerusalem.
Meanwhile, five civilians, all Syrians, including three children, were killed in Israeli strikes in Lebanon on Tuesday, and at least three Lebanese civilians were killed the day before, according to state media and security sources. And on Wednesday, Hezbollah said it will hit new targets in Israel if Israel keeps killing civilians in Lebanon. This, according to the group's leader, Sayed Hassan Nasrallah. He says continuing to target civilians will push the resistance to launch missiles at settlements that were not previously targeted. Hezbollah is, as we've said on this show before, funded by and supported by Iran. And NATO's decision to open its first liaison office in the Middle East reflects its growing concerns about Iran and Russia's increased influence in the region. Dale Gavlak reports from Amman, Jordan.
The decision to open NATO's liaison office in the Jordanian capital, Amman, came during the recent NATO summit in Washington, marking the 75th anniversary of the military alliance. Ryan Boll, a senior Middle East analyst at the RAIN Risk Intelligence in Washington, told VOA the move is a solid diplomatic upgrade for Jordan, creating better facilitation and lines of communication, while placing Jordan solidly in the Western camp to enjoy some of NATO's collective defense capabilities. In a significant gesture of cooperation, Jordan in April intercepted Iranian missiles targeting Israel as they flew through Jordanian airspace. Boll says Jordan's active and coordinated air defense set it apart from Gulf Arab states.
Jordan was flying sorties alongside Western fighters to shoot down these drones and missiles that were crossing their airspace. That was a much more active angle than the Saudis, the Emiratis, or any of the other Gulf Arabs would have been comfortable in doing. They're very interested in maintaining neutrality with the Iranians. Jordan, on the other hand, it's against Israel's campaign in Gaza, but it's also very much against Iran's attempts to use the Gaza war to deepen its influence across the region.
Bowles said Jordan has acted against Iran's hostile actions that have involved using Jordanian territory, including those not directed against the kingdom itself.
And they've been intercepting Iranian weapons going into the West Bank. They're worried about the Iranians on their northern border now that the Russians pulled out of that portion of Syria a couple of years ago. For Jordan, this NATO angle is all about Iran.
Analyst Nicholas Harris of Washington's New Lines Institute told VOA that the opening of a NATO office in Jordan also signals Western intentions to curb Russia's influence in the region.
The establishment of a NATO office in Jordan, which is prime strategic territory in the heart of the Middle East, indicates the wider region. NATO has a role beyond just Europe. And in fact, NATO's mandate extends throughout that southern region of Europe in the Mediterranean that Russia has been actively contesting for the better part of a decade now.
Julian Barnes-Dacey, Middle East Director of the European Council of Foreign Relations, says the NATO presence may quell some Jordanian concerns over Russia.
That institutionalizes those ties a bit more and highlights some of the risks that Jordan is facing, including obviously in terms of the Russian presence in Syria.
But Barnes-Dacey downplays the significance of the new NATO office in Amman, saying Jordan already has long-standing security ties with several Western NATO countries. Del Gablek, VOA News, Amman.
You're listening to Flashpoint Global Crises from the Voice of America. I'm Steve Karish in Washington. A look at how people around the world perceive China coming up. But first, to Ukraine, where a recent poll shows that almost half the country's population supports the idea of starting negotiations with Russia to end the war. VOA's Anna Chernikova is in Kyiv.
According to a new poll taken by the Razumkov Center, a Ukrainian think tank, 44% of the residents of Ukraine believe that the time has come to start official peace talks between Ukraine and Russia, while 35% are convinced that it is still too early. The numbers vary by region. 49% of residents of the central part of Ukraine will accept the start of official negotiations with Russia. The lowest rate among those who are in favor of negotiations is in the western part of Ukraine at 35% and in the east, 33%. Notably, the eastern regions of Ukraine that have remained under constant Russian shelling for the past 2 years are among those who support the negotiations the least, further contradicting Russia's propaganda that people in that area want to be a part of Russia and view themselves as Russian rather than Ukrainian. Many in that area believe that instead of negotiations, Ukrainian army should clear the territory from Russian presence. At the same time, 60% of the citizens of the south of Ukraine believe that the time for official negotiations with Russia has come, which is almost 16% higher than the average for Ukraine. Negotiations aside, the majority of Ukrainians believe that Vladimir Putin's conditions are unacceptable. In particular, 83% of respondents do not agree with the withdrawal of Ukrainian troops from the territory of Donetsk, Luhansk, Kherson, and Zaporizhia regions. 84% of respondents are against giving these territories to Russia. 77% of Ukrainians cannot agree that all Western sanctions against Russia should be lifted. 58% are against the neutral status of Ukraine. Meanwhile, the 60-day period for Ukrainian men to update their military data as required by the new mobilization law ended on Tuesday. Beginning on Wednesday, July 17, the Ukrainian military can send summons to citizens by mail. However, the summons will not be sent by email, as many feared. Those conscripts who did not update their data or register for military service by July 17th will be fined. The police will have the right to detain violators and take them to military service recruitment centers by force. If the fine is not paid, there can be various penalties, including seizure of property or bank accounts and suspension of driver licenses. Similar sanctions, including limitations in providing consular services, will apply to conscripts who fail to update their personal data abroad. In other military news, President Volodymyr Zelensky announced he held a meeting with the Ukrainian top military officials amid increased pressure from the Russian forces at the eastern front line, especially at the Pokrovsk direction, and after recent bilateral meetings that the Ukrainian president held with the allies during the NATO summit. Zelensky said the main priority for Ukraine at this moment is to ensure constant and fast military supply along the entire front line, both supplies from the allies and Ukraine-made weapons. He mentioned that local military manufacturing remains the most important direction for budgeting in both the short and long terms. Anna Chernikova, VOA News, Kyiv.
Back in the United States, a survey by the Pew Research Center finds that most people recognize China's economic influence in their country, but they're divided on whether that influence is good or bad. The poll also finds that more people in the U.S. view China's economic influence negatively as compared to other countries surveyed. Michael Batern has more.
From San Francisco to New York City to Washington, the influence of Chinatowns in Chinese culture can be felt in many U.S. cities, says Rain Brody, who is in Washington's Chinatown, 1.5 kilometers from the White House.
I feel like a lot of influence. I mean, look around. You know, we're in Chinatown.
For Eugene Mosack, the influence of Chinese culture starts with food.
I'm assuming everybody likes Chinese food, so, right? And the Lunar Festival, Chinese New Year, so I'm assuming cultural-wise, it is a very good influence.
While many Americans feel Chinese culture is a positive thing, when it comes to China's influence on the U.S. economy, the Pew Research Center found that nearly 3/4 of Americans have a negative perception. The survey asked people in 35 different countries, including the U.S., a variety of questions related to China, says Pew's Laura Silver.
Where Americans really stand out is that they see most of the impact from China to be negative. In fact, more Americans say that China's economic impact is negative than any of the other countries that we surveyed.
Not only is China one of the top importers of products into the U.S., e-commerce companies linked to China, such as Shein and Temu, have also taken root here. Rain Brody is a Temu shopper.
I guess the sense of prices is really, affordable.
While tempted by the low prices, Kendall Funasaki has not shopped at one of these e-commerce sites.
Websites like Temu, Chinese websites like that, maybe have a little bit of a negative effect on consumer behavior just because it's encouraging people to buy a lot more and then get rid of the quality on those items. Isn't that great? So it's just like a lot of consumption and then discarding of items, which I think is very wasteful.
In addition to some negative perceptions of Chinese-linked e-commerce companies, the U.S. government has also warned against the social media app TikTok, whose parent company is Beijing-based ByteDance, says Christopher Tang, a business professor with the University of California, Los Angeles.
The U.S. government is concerned about whether TikTok can be used as a vehicle to spread potential fake news and also biased views about different candidates during the election years.
But Brody says there are also benefits to TikTok.
But I feel like TikTok can be used as a way of personal expression. You know, everyone has their own opinions and thoughts. I feel like it can work
either way.
The Pew Research Center also found differences in people's views about China's influence based on age.
Typically, older people are slightly more likely to say that China has a large impact and that that impact is negative. That's true in the United States, for example.
UCLA's Tang says these findings were not surprising.
For the younger generations, they like TikTok, they like Chinese products, they like Shein. They are less concerned about the situation with China. So they view China as a relative more positive. But the older generations, they still thinking about the war, they think about the global security issues. They are more concerned about China. So I think that the results were not that surprising.
Pew's findings are based on public perception and are not indicative of how much influence China actually has over domestic economies. But it could be a useful tool, says Silver.
Public perceptions likely do play a role in how politicians think about things. And so we think that giving voice to the public is an important service.
A service the presidential candidates may use to win votes. Michael Buturn, VOA News, Washington.
Along with economics, security in Asia is in the news. Kylie Vaughn has the latest.
In Taiwan, Premier Chou Yong-tai responded to remarks made by former U.S. President Donald Trump, who said Taiwan should be paying the United States for protection from China. Yong-tai said Taiwan is dedicated to strengthening its own defenses and emphasized that relations between his country and the United States still remain rock solid. The United States is Taiwan's most important international supporter and arms supplier, but the two sides have no formal defense agreement. Meanwhile, in Washington, U.S. Acting Assistant Secretary of Defense for Space Policy, Vipin Narang, sat for an exclusive interview with VOA's Eun Young Cho to discuss the new deterrence guidelines between the U.S. and South Korea that were signed last week. Narang said, as important as this alliance is, it is not the first time the U.S. has made this type of deterrence agreement.
So is it accurate when President Yoon frequently say in the past few months, with the Washington Declaration, U.S. and South Korea are now nuclear-based alliance?
When we formally extend nuclear deterrence to our allies, they are it is a nuclear alliance. And you know, South Korea is an example of that, our European allies in NATO. So NATO publicly says, for example, that so long as nuclear weapons exist, NATO will be a nuclear alliance. And the relationship with Iraq, similarly, is a formal extension of U.S. nuclear. We commit to defend South Korea with all capabilities, including nuclear.
However, Narang made it clear that only the U.S. president will be able to authorize the use and employment of U.S. nuclear weapons. Kylie Vaughn, VOA News.
And finally today, perhaps not quite a global crisis, more of an individual crisis, but definitely a warning to others. 14 high school students in Tokyo were hospitalized on Tuesday after eating spicy chips. The snack, called R18 curry chips, even comes with a warning for those under the age of 18 and for those with high blood pressure and a weak stomach, saying they should avoid it. The students were treated for minor symptoms and will likely be okay. And that's going to wrap it up for us today. There's more VOA coverage 24 hours a day on our website, voanews.com, and across our social media platforms. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thanks for listening. Until tomorrow, I'm Steve Karish.
For deeper dives and expert analysis, listen to VOA Podcasts. Issues in the News explores the biggest stories every weekend, while International Edition keeps you informed every weekday. Plus, with the 5-minute newscast at the top of every hour, you're always up to date.